Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Every Wednesday, 11 o'clock, Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc., joins us to tell us the latest as to what's going on. Michael, welcome.
Thank you, Noel. How are you doing?
I don't know, Mike. It seems like it's been eons since last Wednesday. I mean, there's just so much going on. I don't even know where to start. I'm going to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, no, you know, it's funny. You know, I usually send you over topics, as you know, before these hours. And now there's just, you know, so much that I said, we'll just get on and talk. I saw the funny meme that's going around is the one that said that folks have had their 7-day trial period for 2021 and they want their money back.
Yeah, exactly. What hopes and aspirations we had have been very short-lived thus far,
you know,
2021.
At least we got the Saints, right?
Exactly. Yes. That is the silver lining right now. I started out my year having to go and get a surgery done, so that unexpected. So that wasn't good either.
My Lord. Well, I'll tell you, we're just getting off. We just had a big webinar with 100-plus people on it talking about the new PPP and the new employee retention credit that's out there. And that's actually a good bit of news. And it's actually what I would call, you know, a liquidity bridge, because I know you've been talking a lot about the vaccines and there's been some bumps in the rollout. But the vaccines are going to get out there, and I don't know if it was you or somebody else, it might have been Tommy Tucker, that described it kind of like a bit of a traffic pinch that's going to open up and it's going to flow. And so by, you know, the middle of this year, I think, the June, July time frame, I think that New Orleans is going to be in a very different place, and there's going to be a lot of pent up demand, and we just got to make sure that our businesses and workers and families get there. And you know, this current round of relief, I think, you know, is not coming a moment too soon.
No, absolutely. There seems to be, there have been a couple of hiccups. They're still waiting for the promulgation of rules and so forth. Spoke to Guy Williams Monday. They're waiting. Community banks are waiting. A couple of minority-owned banks were given a two-day lead time. We believe that actually happened, but we're not sure.
Yeah, so what I would tell everybody who is listening is a couple things. If you got PPP the first time or have not gotten it yet, get with your local bank, because whether you had it once or not before, you qualify both times. Slightly different characteristics. For my friends and compatriots in the restaurant industry, there's a bonus for restaurants this time. Instead of qualifying for just 2.5 times of payroll, you can qualify for 3.5 times of payroll. And the only kind of big qualification difference that folks really need to worry about is that if you're going for your second draw on the PPP, you have to be able to show a 25% reduction in revenue loss in 2020 versus 2019. And that's the whole point, Noel. You know, there's some businesses we know that have actually done very well over the last year, anything having to do with homes, a lot of consumables. So this is not meant for those businesses. This is meant for the hospitality businesses and others that have really suffered. And, you know, you can spend 60% of it on payroll, 40% on things like rent and utilities. And, you know, most of it's going to be easily forgivable. So folks should talk to the banks on that. The other one that folks are not paying attention to, but in some ways is even a more interesting program, is the Employee Retention Tax Credit. And on this one, and it's different, but folks should listen, basically for every employee you have, you can get up to $14,000 of a refundable tax credit. If you could just show that in this year, you have a 20% reduction versus 2019 for the first quarter and the second quarter, 7,000 each. So bottom line is that if Newell's Corporation had 10 employees and you have that little dip this year versus pre-COVID, you would get $140,000 of refundable credit from the IRS. And so it's, you know, this is just pure cash, and folks should take it so they can, you know, have some cash flow till we get to the other side.
Yeah. Michael, obviously there's been some additional chatter about $2,000, and then January 6th happens, which was a horrific event in D.C., and now we're off and running on an impeachment. Kind of curious as to when we will regroup and redirect and start thinking about providing more sustenance and aid to those in this country.
There are two things that look like they're teed up, and it's absolutely my hope that whatever happens in D.C., you know, now going forward relative to any of the impeachment proceedings or not, that it doesn't distract from this, because that would really compound the tragedy of the 6th. And so there's two things. One is that there's a lot of talk about there being a second relief or stimulus bill to follow on this one. I think it's a little premature to talk about that, Newell, because we just have to kind of see how this one gets digested. You know, we're still talking about almost $1 trillion. And so I think it's going to take some time to see how quickly it goes and what the residual needs are. But then the second thing, which we've got to really pay attention to, and we're getting together regionally, is that we expect there to be a major infrastructure bill in the first months of the administration. And we're talking about in the trillions. And so we're now getting together all of our needs, and some of them are in traditional infrastructure like roads and bridges, service to the airport, sewer and water, stormwater needs. And some of them are like digital infrastructure, like broadband and 5G. And we think that this is a great way to do two things: put Americans back to work and literally build the future of the country. In fact, I don't know why we didn't do this before, because it would have been a great way to stimulate the economy and build the future. But, you know, politically, it just didn't happen. So those are the two things that we're working towards now, is if needed, a second round of relief for businesses and individuals. But I think even more fundamentally is getting America back to work by kind of a WPA for the 21st century, I guess you could call it.
Michael, local elected leaders, I don't know if you've been talking to them lately, both at the state and city level. What are you hearing from them?
You know, I think that there is most of the focus at the local and state level recently has just been on this COVID surge, and on trying to manage it and to determine which phase we're in. And, you know, that's completely understandable, because we're in a situation is comparable to the worst times back in April. So that's why I think that we're trying at GNO Inc. and working with our partners to have this focus on the future, because obviously you got to deal with a critical need today and try to mitigate the impacts of the virus. But at the same time, if we don't focus on putting those plans in place, like our GNO Future plan, and the funding in place, like an infrastructure plan for the future, you know, we're gonna get to June, July soon enough, and we won't have done anything to prepare and take advantage for the economy coming back. So, you know, I think we're trying. You know, I understand why elected officials have to be in the moment, because the moment demands it. But at the same time, we also have to keep scanning the horizon to make sure we're walking in the right direction. So I think we're trying to fill in on that more future-looking side.
Obviously, we're now talking about a South African strain in the coronavirus, a UK strain. Just yesterday, reports of possibly two strains unique to the United States that may have revealed themselves. They're running some genomic sequencing on all of that. In talking to some of the healthcare folks, is there more angst and anxiety as more and more of this is coming to the forefront?
You know, most of what I'm hearing about right now is people trying to figure out how to get the vaccinations out in the most efficient way. I think there was an idea up front that it was going to be, you know, very ordered, and there was going to be this very pedantic approach. And I think what people are realizing right now is that you kind of need just to put it out there and just get it to folks as quickly as possible. And even if it's not as exactly ordered, that's okay. So there's a talk now about potentially getting the vaccines to private businesses to allow them to help with inoculations and basically pushing it out as much as possible. And to some degree, Newell, it kind of feels analogous to what we learned with the PPP program, that when you try to push things out through the traditional bureaucratic structures, they're just not set up to do it fast enough. And you've got to partner with the private sector, and you've got to basically use all means necessary to get it out there. I haven't heard that much talk, and again, this is not a conversation I'm having every day, with healthcare professionals about concern about the new strains, because, you know, of course, we know that these viruses do mutate all the time. And I think, tell me if I'm wrong on this, Newell, but I think that they still believe that the vaccines are effective against the new strains, right? We haven't found one that's like a super virus that doesn't.
No, they do believe that the vaccines will cover it, but obviously it's still in its infancy. Not a lot of testing has been done. And the prevalence of genomic sequencing testing for these individual strains, we're really not doing as many as a lot of the public health folks are telling me that they would like to see, so that they can understand, get a better picture of how pervasive these strains are within certain geographic areas.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, we're playing catch up to the thing, but my sense is, again, that the efficacy of the vaccines is incredibly encouraging, better than we thought. There are more coming online every day, and it's just about kind of pushing it out there. And so, you know, we're doing a lot of these things simultaneously. We're trying to deal with the acute, you know, infections today and keep people out of ICU. We're trying to push the vaccines out, but at the same time, we're trying to make sure that our businesses and families sustain for the future, and that we're positioned for, you know, these opportunities that are coming out of it. It's a lot to manage at the same time, but that's what we're charged with right now.
Michael, obviously a lot of issues in and around Wednesday, January 6th, a lot of corporate flashback or pushback, I should say, about folks taking political positions. Do you fear, I mean, you know, Louisiana is a red state. All but one of our elected federal officials to Congress are Republicans. Do you fear some kind of retaliatory action by some of these major corporations that we're trying to lure here all the time to the state of Louisiana?
That's a great question. I certainly have not heard of that yet. Nobody's mentioned something like that to me, and so I'm hoping that it doesn't come to that. And I do know that the companies that I've talked to who are kind of having these discussions are really at pains about them. And this is something that they've never done before. And so I think they're trying to go very slowly and be very careful. And I think that there's this tension everywhere between wanting to address forthrightly and appropriately what happened on the 6th without causing it to get worse, because I think everybody realizes that what we really need to do as a country now is come together and get back to work. These companies that are making these decisions, let's be clear that although they're being driven by the boardroom, they are, and there is a philosophical or political or moral aspect to them, they're fundamentally about the bottom line. They're fundamentally about how to maximize long-term value and mitigate damage. And so if you think about it from that perspective, what do businesses, you know, hate more than anything? They hate instability. They hate uncertainty. Markets hate that too. So I think that you're going to see the business community kind of not trying to create more instability and more angst and more anger, but try to move back towards a more stable situation sooner rather than later.
Yeah, that was my hope, too. I thought this was short-sighted on many of these major corporations' parts in engaging in this, because it opens up a landscape, a tit-for-tat, and individual municipal state governments have a lot of authority and a lot of power, and when they start acting collectively together, it can get ugly relatively quick.
Yeah, and just as a, you know, the challenge here, and you just, I think, hit it on the head, is that we don't want to get into a cycle of endless retribution, political retribution, economic retribution, because it, you know, it does spiral, it's self-enforcing, and fundamentally, it's not constructive. I mean, if you kind of look forward and say, you know, what is our challenge as a nation? It is to be more competitive, and that involves things like investing in education, investing in infrastructure, investing in becoming a world leader in things like AI and machine learning. And those are things that require, you know, bipartisan support and support of the American people. If we just evolve into fighting and being on the pages of CNN or, you know, the videos of CNN, we're generating a ton of heat and no light as a nation, and that's not great. So, you know, turning down the heat when we can, I think, is the right thing to do.
Absolutely. Got to get to a break. We'll be right back with Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc. Stay with us, folks. Had to take the CBS News break to give you the latest as to where we are on the impeachment proceedings. It seems like they're moving forward, and we'll take a vote this afternoon. Joining us is Michael Heck, CEO of GNO Inc. Michael, you and I talked about this quite a while. It's come up in a bunch of different contexts as it relates to taxes. And here recently, as a result of an article in The Lens, and I understood that there has been some conversations back and forth with the Louisiana Tax Commission from the city. Recently, City Council Member Helena Moreno, a council member at large, writes a letter to the Louisiana Tax Commission because Errol Williams, as the tax assessor, reduced the assessment of some of all of the major hotels within the city of New Orleans. And she was complaining about same. I kind of find it a little interesting. I warned friends of mine in the city administration, and you recall this conversation you and I had back in the early summer, that this was going to in fact happen because they value them on an income approach. And the reason they do is that when things are well and you're doing good, you get higher valuations than you would get otherwise. But if you have a downturn in the economy, be careful what you ask for, because they're going to go in and get reductions, and they would be under the law entitled to same. And that's exactly what has happened. And I was not surprised by it, but the city and the city administration seems to be caught off guard by this happening. Your thoughts?
Yeah, no, it shouldn't have been a surprise. And, you know, let's be realistic. You know, these hotels, if they weren't hosting evacuees from Lake Charles, have been just in a terrible, terrible position. And so, you know, not only was this something that was in, you know, the legal right of the assessor, it's something that just makes strategic sense. You don't want to put these hotels out of business. And frankly, we don't want them to not necessarily all go out of business, but get snapped up by majors, and if they're independent still, and lose them and their cultural flavor. So, no, this was something that I was a bit surprised that there was a reaction to it, because I expected it, and it makes sense, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, this just kind of begs more of the question in my mind. Where do they think all of these monies are coming from? I mean, like, none of these corporations are the federal government, where they just go in the basement and turn on the printing machine and start printing Benjamins. I mean, you know, it doesn't work that way. And I'm at a complete loss as to how, you know, because there is a strong argument that the income approach, when things are going well, is not a fair valuation either, right? because, you know, value of these properties are far greater than 1 year kind of scope of vision. And
that's right. Well, and you also got to say, what are you actually taxing them for? You know, what is the purpose of property tax? And you know, to me, you're taxing buildings or properties because they use municipal services. They use drainage. They use police. They use fire. They use roads. And so you're reinvesting in that. And so I think that if you look at it over the long term and say that's what we're trying to raise monies for, you know, you can kind of appreciate more why you're being taxed, why everybody should be taxed personally. And I get in trouble for saying this, but there's a real question about all the nonprofits that don't pay any of these property taxes because they're using these services. And you could make a strong argument that they should pay some of them as a usage fee. I think it's just people lose track of where the money comes from and about why it's being used. And you got to kind of get back to those first principles.
Yeah, I mean, I just this whole thing, and it's why I've said early on, you need to re-engineer, redesign government. You got to right-size it to where you're going to be in your next 3 to 5 years of your revenue cycle, because otherwise you're going to be upside down. And you can't wait to see whether or not the largesse of the federal government is going to give you enough money to pull yourself out. And that's all. That's one-time money. You know, so you're funding operations on one-time dollars. That's not a good strategy either.
No, it's a terrible strategy. And if you look at what the business community did, or frankly, like, you know, going into this COVID crisis, you know, we cut our budget back in March by 25%. We just cut it. We said, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know if this is going to be 1 month or 1 year or longer. So we just immediately, you know, cut back. And, you know, we were able to end the year, thanks to support, doing fine, actually exceeding the reduced budget. But, you know, I've been there from being in the restaurant industry. I lived through the dot-com crash of 2001, where we saw a 40% decrease year on year in same store. And once you've been through that once, you realize that you take care of things up front. Otherwise, the pain down the road is 10x as bad.
What confuses me even more is this mindset that that's okay that you had to go through that exercise. You're in the private sector. But when you work in the public sector, there's an entitlement. And it's though it's a protected class that has to be preserved at all cost. And I just don't see it that way. In fact, if we ran ourselves more like a business, maybe we wouldn't be dealing with the issues that we're dealing with right now.
Well, I think that it would be great for every elected official to have had to have made payroll at least once in their life. I'll tell you, the only time, Noel, in my life that I've ever not been able to sleep because of stress, because I'm a good sleeper and I handle stress pretty well most of the time, was during this dot-com crash in with our restaurants, where I knew or I was fearful that not all the checks I was cutting for my employees were going to go through. And I knew they were going to literally get their checks and run to the bank and try to deposit them. And that stress has stayed with me, the sense of responsibility for people and for their families and for them, their ability to pay their rent. And once you've had that experience, I think you think about money and cash flow differently. I mean, you know, there are a few experiences I think that all young people should have. They should all work in a restaurant so they understand cash and people. They should all have some type of military or volunteer service so they understand discipline. And I think they should also all go on a Mormon mission and have to sell something that nobody wants in a language they don't speak, because that teaches them salesmanship and to have a thick skin. And if you don't have those experiences, it's hard to emotionally and intellectually put yourself in the place of a small business owner.
When I think back that this 2020 year had the benefit of Mardi Gras, which is a big uptick in OC rate in the hotels for an elongated period of time, and obviously the beneficiary of the conventions that were had between January 1st and some date in March that I can't recall where everything got shut down.
13th, yeah.
We're not having that in 2021. Selections and assessments are bad now. I would suspect that 2021 could be even worse.
Yeah, and I think there's another way of looking at it. So you're right. Like, the first half of 2021 is going to be bad. The second half might be boom times. It's not clear that it's going to make up for the first half. And some things like conventions take years to come back because of the planning cycle. But the shame here is that I think a lot of businesses, everyone that I talk to, frankly, who's making it through this, is saying, Michael, it's been terrible. But the silver lining is that we're coming out of this more efficient than we were going in. We're never going to go back to the same way that we manage our office, the same way that we manage our supply chain. We've discovered ways to become more efficient and do more with less. And it would be a great exercise for the public sector to go through that as well. Universities are going through it. They're coming out of this more efficient, right? And it's not clear that the public sector is having that same experience. But it would be good because, you know, we have a public sector that is in many ways, you know, old-fashioned in how it's been operating. And it could come out of this more competitive. But, you know, it usually takes some financial pressure to make that happen.
Yeah, I mean, well, we've had about 8 months of financial pressure, and I really haven't seen much as it relates to out-of-box thinking as to how this is going to occur. I mean, when you add to this that the council sits as the board of review over all of this, I mean, I was a tax collector, so I'm not speaking out of school. Once the roles were starting to be established by the assessor, my tax collection department was always in communication and conversation as to what to expect as it relates to reductions or increases in the role, because that made up a major part of the funding of the sheriff's office. So, you know, and we were developing our own budget, going through our budget process, and how do you budget if you don't know where the revenue expectations are or forecasting is going to be? You got to have a conversation with the assessor, not once, not twice, not three times, a whole bunch of times, because things are changing through the process. And, you know, as I read this letter from Helena Moreno, it just strikes me, I don't think anybody knows where the ball is over there. I mean, they said, well, nobody told us what was happening. Well, things don't just happen. You got to make them happen. You got to go find out what the information is, because it's critical to every decision that you're making from a funding perspective. I mean, that's like the CEO saying, well, you know, I hadn't bothered the CFO that's down the hall. I don't want to bother him. I don't want to give him a call. What, really?
Yeah, no, it's the, you know, it's the ostrich, you know, theory of budgeting, you know, head in the sand. You can't see
yeah,
me.
I mean, you know,
therefore,
everything's on cruise control and it's all going to be hunky-dory. No, that's not how it works. Things are changing in the midst of this crisis. You think you would be ultra sensitive to wanting to have the most current, relevant, up-to-date information as to your revenue sources, because you know you're in a depleted state.
Yeah, I mean, you know, let's be clear. A lot of municipalities are in a very cash flow sensitive situation right now, and where they have to know literally what the balances are, because it has to be managed. There's not enough there right now. Now, it's not all municipalities. Again, we've talked about this. You know, Jefferson is actually coming in pretty flat. Some parishes like Tangi are actually up, you know, year on year, just because of the way people spent their money. But no doubt that tourism dependent, you know, places like New Orleans are taking a big hit. And, you know, you want the silver lining to be that you come out of it you know, with your pencil sharper than it was going in.
No, absolutely. Got to get to a break. We'll be back with Michael Hecht's final thoughts when we return. Stay with us, folks. We are back with Michael Hecht, President and CEO of GNO Inc. Michael, final issue, fast forward program. There was a recently announced by school superintendent Cade Brumley. He was running Jefferson Parish Schools. Sad to see him go, but happy for him with the new opportunity that he has with the state of Louisiana. Sounds like he is going to shake things up and change the course and direction of that organization in a quick fashion.
Yeah, no, Cade's a great guy. We had dinner a few weeks ago, and he told me about this program, and he said, what do you think about it? And I said, man, it's perfect, because when I talk to companies, they don't want fancy degrees anymore. They want people who are coming out of school, even high school, ready to go to work on day one. And then when I talk to my kids, my kids, they don't want fancy degrees anymore. They want something that can get them a job. I mean, you know, they've lived through so much financial uncertainty that they want something that's going to pay. So the Fast Forward Initiative will allow students to spend their 11th and 12th grades, or last two grades, on a college campus or in a high school kind of post-secondary satellite campus like the Satellite Center in St. Charles, or go work in a German-style pre-apprenticeship or apprenticeship program at a local company. I love this. I think it's about making education more efficient. It's about getting our companies, workers that are ready to go on day one. And so I applaud, Dr. Brumley and the state for doing this. Gina Wink's a big supporter, and we're going to help get companies involved in it going forward.
So it's called Fast Forward. What's the approach going to be?
Well, basically, students in their junior or senior year of high school are going to have three options. They're either going to be able to go onto a university campus like a Delgado or a UNO and get a transfer degree, so basically get a degree like an associate's degree while they are still in high school. Or the second thing they're going to be able to do is they're going to be able to go and work in an apprenticeship program at a company while they're still in high school. Or the third pathway they can do is called Jumpstart 2.0, which is basically more degrees that you can do at satellite campuses. This is a program that started under John White that they're actually folding into the Fast Forward. But the idea of all three of them is to give students either classroom skills or on-the-job skills that they need to graduate high school or 2 years of university or 4 years of university and go right into, you know, a $25 an hour plus benefits jobs to support themselves and support their family. So it's really about making the education to workforce pipeline demand driven, treating businesses as the customer because they're really who you want to satisfy if you want to create sustainable jobs, and making sure that kids don't graduate with a lot of debt from college and not a good job. It's trying to kind of expunge that.
I was reading an article just last evening, a lot of chatter about this loan forgiveness program that the Biden administration is thinking about. And it's amazing how many kids can't earn enough money to pay just 1 year of their student loan debt.
Well, it's usurious, it's terrible, it's predatory. And so it's something that we have to do, not just by addressing, you know, the loan structures, but by actually addressing the educational system itself and say that, you know, you want a system that's going to reduce costs and increase earning potential. We've got some models here. Xavier is one of the best at that. Xavier, I think, is number one in the nation, certainly not top five, at students who enter the university in the bottom two quintiles of earnings. And then at the end of their life, they're in the top two quintiles. Loyola, another example of a school that really is very efficient at this, and then all of our public universities as well, of course. So, no, the Fast Start program, the Fast Forward program, is absolutely what we want today. Businesses are demanding it, students are demanding it, parents are demanding it, and Louisiana, frankly, has been at the forefront of a lot of this stuff. Back from our workforce program with LED that was redone, the work that's happening in charter schools, our LCTCS schools under Monty Sullivan. So this continues a recent tradition of us kind of being nation leading in education and workforce reform.
I hope we keep the momentum going. I'm a big believer in experiential learning. I think a lot of kids learn much better hands-on when they can see it dimensionally, as opposed to just sitting and looking at a textbook.
Yeah, experience is the best teacher. Sometimes they're hard lessons, but you don't forget.
You recognize right away, life's not fair for sure. Michael Heck, really appreciate the time spent with you, my friend. Have a great week.
All right, see you soon, my friend. Better times ahead.
All righty, Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc. We'll be right back, folks.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.